Good morning. May I please the court. My name is Bashir Ghazi Alam, attorney for petitioner Khushal Sharifi. I've previously noted to the clerk that the name was transposed.
Backwards, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry.
Hopefully that will be fixed. In this case, the BIA abused its discretion in finding that the petitioner failed to present sufficient evidence of changed country conditions in Afghanistan in order to permit him to file a late motion to reopen. In fact, petitioner has provided new evidence with evidence already in the record shows that he has a reasonable likelihood to prevail on his asylum withholding of removal and that he has made a prima facie case of asylum. Now, in order for us to in order for the court to determine whether the abuse of discretion has occurred, we need to look at the circumstances that existed at the time of the asylum hearing and at the circumstances that the new and material circumstances that petitioner presented in his motion to reopen. As the court knows through the pleadings, the asylum hearing was held back in 1991 and the motion to reopen was filed in 2010. And the BIA had dismissed the case in 1994. Those dates are very important in this particular case. From 1991 until this date, it is very obvious that the country conditions have materially changed several times in Afghanistan.
Counsel, may I ask a question?
Yes.
I appreciate your presentation and your briefing. I'm sure we all have read all of it. My question really goes to the changed country conditions. And one of the things you argue is that it's not only that the country has changed, but that it has changed vis-a-vis your client's family situation, because of his brother and so forth, and the threat has increased for your client. That's your position. Do we have authority that allows that?
That is correct, Your Honor. The petitioner's personal circumstances is personal to the petitioner, which the court knows that any kind of material change in a country does not automatically mean that any Afghan can jump on a boat or on a plane and come to the United States and seek asylum. That is for sure. Now, the record demonstrates that Mr. Sharifi was denied asylum because he could not establish that he had partly because he did not have family in the United States and that his family, that he actually had family in Afghanistan. Now, that's part of what personally material to Mr. Sharifi's claim. Now, that coupled with the general change in country conditions demonstrates that presently Mr. Sharifi has presented new evidence, the new material change.
Okay, so what are the changes? Is it his brother's disappearance? Is it specifically? I'm watching the clock, and you have very few minutes. So can you help me? What are your strongest arguments for change conditions?
The change condition is that the persecution of Shias began immediately after the Soviets withdrew and when Afghanistan fell into a civil war. Now, Mr. Sharifi did belong, even though he was a minor, he belonged He was of a Shia a minority group, but he also belonged and helped the Hizb-e Islami, which is one Mujahideen group, and who ended up taking power in 1992 along with some other groups. And they, in turn, before taking power, they turned on each other and they slaughtered and abused and killed a lot of the minorities.
Yes.
In Afghanistan.
Yes.
And a lot of minorities turned on each other. Now, as a result, the minorities became a huge target. Now, in his asylum, in original asylum application, Mr. Sharifi does not claim asylum through his religion, because back then, although there were religious tensions in Afghanistan, the religious tensions began after his asylum hearing, and they escalated to an extent where the Taliban, which partially gave rise to the Taliban, and Taliban, whose, as we all know, whose main ideals are to suppress religion, freedom of religion, and minorities, and the rights of minorities, and political opinions of minorities.
What was the basis of his first application?
The basis of his first application was his political opinion, in that.
Right, and the IJ seemed to be concerned that there has been a state of unrest and turmoil consistently, and did not speak to the change conditions that you're describing, the rise of the Taliban and whatnot. This is the change we are asked to consider. Is that right?
That is part of the change that we're asked to consider.
All right.
Now,
you have 3 minutes. So
now,
can you tell me the other changes?
In addition to that, during the course of developments, his family, most of his cousins were killed in Kandahar. He is a part of a Farsi-speaking minority Shia group in Kandahar, which is the birthplace of the Taliban. Now, obviously, his family had partially moved during the initial asylum application, but subsequent to the asylum application, his entire family moved from that region. Now, in Kandahar, which consists of more than 1,000 villages, there's only 6 villages in Kandahar province that have the population of Farsi-speaking minorities in the whole province.
Let me ask you a question about something that I think you alluded to, or you may perhaps answered, and that is the changed circumstances. The regulation, the statute say that changed circumstances arising in the country of nationality. And so the changed circumstances are the fact that he is now married and he is a productive member of society, doesn't that really relate to the issue not before us, but that if we remanded it, it would relate to the question, perhaps mitigating circumstances concerning whether or not he should be granted asylum?
That's
Isn't
correct.
That really the
that's
issue?
One of the bases that the BIA makes his decision on, that this has actually changed personal circumstances. When, as a matter of fact, his changed personal circumstances coupled with he's a Shia minority, and also he is a former member of the Hizb-e Islami, all that together demonstrates that there's changed country conditions that give rise to an asylum claim for personally to him. Now, the BIA also holds that this is part of a petitioner only presents evidence of ongoing civil unrest, and that
the conditions there in Afghanistan are just getting worse and worse and worse as time goes by.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that he's part of this minority group. His brother is, we're told, is a prisoner somewhere in a cave.
At this particular point, Your Honor, it's presumed
where he is.
It's presumed that his brother is killed by the Taliban, because he was originally kidnapped by the Taliban. Then he was detained by the Afghan forces, and because he was previously a member of a Hezbollah Islami, and after interrogation he was released back, and on top of that the government provided his family a letter which warned him to get out of the country, and warned also that his brother should not come back to Afghanistan. Yeah, so
that's the letter that's in evidence, signed by the Ministry of Interior of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And it tells us that your client should under no circumstances return to Afghanistan. Talked about there's a paragraph about what was going on in the country and some of the things you've discussed. And
That's correct, Your Honor. And all these facts that are presented are facts that were discovered and were only discoverable after the initial asylum hearing. That's the important gist of this case. Because all of these facts, if these facts were known to the IJ, who...
He's married now.
He's married to a United States citizen. That's correct, Your Honor.
Does he have children?
No, he does not have children yet. And
you're not arguing that his marriage, that changed personal circumstance, warrants the reopening.
Case,
that's not your argument.
That's not my argument, Your Honor. That was only mentioned as part of the asylum application, and the BIA interpreted our argument to be that it's based on personal circumstances, which is not our claim from the beginning. Now, it's very important to note that
you just want to show he's a good person.
Yes, Your Honor.
We had to keep him here. He's been here a long time.
He's a good person. He's a former member of Hizb Islami, which paints a very bad impression of him. However, back then, back in the 80s, all the Mujahideen groups were united together in order to fight the Soviet Union. And
his father and brother were killed during
the
engagement.
And just for juxtaposition, Your Honor, if a person, a Pashto speaker, who is a Sunni in Kandahar, who has never been involved in any kind of resistance movement or has never been dragged into the whole conflict, that person probably would not meet the changed country conditions that we're talking about now. The components in this case that makes this a changed country condition for my client is that he previously had been a member of a political organization. He had helped. He was only 14 years old. And on top of that, his father and uncle were killed in the war, and his brother now is missing. So, and also, he's a Shia minority. And Shia minorities have not only been persecuted by Mr. Hikmatyar, who happens to have persecuted thousands of Afghan intellectuals after he came to power, or after he was able to defeat the Soviet Union. He turned against Afghan intellectuals, and his whole goal was to make Afghanistan an Islamic state. As a matter of fact, today, Afghanistan, that Article 3 of Afghanistan's constitution says that no law should be against or contradict the provisions of Sharia law. Sharia law, Afghanistan has adopted the Hanafi
Council.
School of thought. Which means that...
Significantly over your time.
Okay.
Yeah, well, just what is the finish? See, now you're getting passionate.
In Afghanistan, after the Taliban were overthrown, it became a haven for warlords to occupy positions in government, and also, the constitution that was passed was a very conforming to the ideology that the Taliban and Gulbuddin Hikmatyar wanted to implement in Afghanistan. Although it does have provisions that call for human rights and women's rights and minority rights, however, there's been a lot of cases in Afghanistan where a lot of judges have ruled that Article 3 trumps all the other provisions. Now, if that constitution is open to that type of interpretation, you can imagine that a government that is occupied with warlords and a lot of corrupt officials, that will enable them to continue the oppression of minorities such as Mr. Sharifi now and in the future.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
What have we got to gain by kicking him out of the country?
He's not eligible for asylum.
Counsel,
what have we got to gain? So you want to send
what him, we have to gain, Your Honor, is that we follow him, the law.
You want to send him back to a place where he's in danger, where the whole country is, if you read the papers, corrupt, where Karzai is now telling us what to do, and after we spend all that money and that blood and all the rest of it.
But none of those are ground for asylum, Your Honor.
What?
None of those are ground for asylum. That would pertain to every...
I just asked you what we had to gain by doing it.
Okay, what we have to gain is that we follow the law.
Well, let me ask you a question on that, though. The decision that we're looking at is not whether or not he's entitled to asylum. The question is whether or not his case should be reopened.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So then, see if you can reconcile. First of all, tell me what the burden is that we have here. It's not an issue. We certainly, the BIA had to look at whether or not there was the potential for him to be successful on asylum. But because the question is really whether that there had been changed circumstances, they found that there wasn't changed circumstances. The only thing that the petitioner had to establish was a prima facie case. So, what is our standard of review on whether or not, on this record, the plaintiff has established a prima facie case? Not whether or not he's entitled to asylum, but whether he should go back because he has established or not a prima facie case. What is the standard?
Right, well, it's abuse of discretion, but the key words you said were on this record. Virtually nothing that my opponent has argued is on this record.
What about the letter?
There is a letter.
The authenticity challenged?
Well, it was at a motion to reopen, so it just goes.
Is it inherently implausible? Is the letter inherently implausible? Is that your position?
Well, it doesn't say what he says it says.
Well, I'm looking at it. So walk me through it. What am I missing?
Okay. It doesn't say anything about Shiites being persecuted. In fact, there's nothing in the record that says the Taliban persecutes Shiites. The closest we get is there's discrimination against Shiites and Hazaras. Of course, the Taliban is brutal to everybody. There's nothing in the record about Hekmatyar persecuting Shiites. In fact, in the original asylum application, there was nothing in the record that petitioner belonged or was part of Hizb-e Islami.
Let me ask you, what would, in your mind, constitute changed circumstances? When you have circumstances, as we all know, it's a matter of judicial notice, is what's happening in Afghanistan, and what the changes have been since his original petition.
If
it's a matter of judicial notice, as Judge Pregerson, my colleague, has said, that it doesn't take rocket science to understand what is happening there now. In conjunction with what he had occurred previously, now that record is available. And then if you take into account the letter, which is also Judge Christensen has mentioned the letter, why isn't that merely a prima facie? What is the standard? It's not probable cause. It's not preponderance of the evidence. Show me a case but prima facie case is a low standard to start with. And then the question of abuse of discretion is you look back at what the court relied on to determine whether or not that very minimal standard has been met.
Well, this court has said the critical question, and this is the standard, is whether circumstances have changed sufficiently that a petitioner who previously did not have a legitimate claim for asylum now has a well-founded fear of future persecution. Now, we go back to the original asylum. It was denied. He was found to be a liar. He was found incredible, and he never petitioned the court for review. He was ordered removed, and this goes to Judge Pregerson's question as to what we have
today. Counsel, your brief doesn't discuss that.
Doesn't discuss?
The credibility determination.
It is actually in the brief what we said.
What page?
I'd have to pull, but what we said, Your Honor, it was in a footnote, said, although the board in the motion to reopen did not rely on adverse credibility.
But you want us to?
No. We're going through the background here. That's all.
Well, so it's not relevant to Judge Silver's question?
Well, I believe it is.
Well, you're talking about the standard of review, and she's asking you quite clearly about exactly what question we should be looking to. So it's important to know whether you're asking us to consider something the BIA didn't rely upon in making this ruling.
No, of course not. We could not do that. We do not do that.
Thank you for
the background information, the same as all the information that my opponent has presented, which is not in the record.
Okay, so let's talk about what we really need to focus on.
He's your learned colleague.
My learned colleague, Your Honor. And trust me, I do have much affection for him. I think he's done an excellent job.
I think it's really important, and you've both done a good job of explaining that we're not looking at personal circumstances here. We're looking at changed country conditions, if there were changed country conditions. And it's a little bit tricky in this case because the country was in a state of turmoil at the time of the original application. At least that's how it looks to me.
It was in a state of civil war, Your Honor.
Right. And so that's not different, except that it isn't just the case. Petitioner's position is, of course, that there were different folks in charge at the time, if I can speak colloquially. So when I look at this law, I'm trying to figure out where we draw the line between country conditions and conditions that really materially affect a particular family. So we have this authority in the Ninth Circuit. Is it the Navas case?
Yes, Your Honor.
I may be mispronouncing it. You'll know it better than I. But it says that when evidence regarding a family history of persecution is considered, the relationship between the persecution of family members and the circumstances of the applicant must be examined. Did the IJ consider that here?
This never went to the IJ.
Oh, forgive me. Was that considered
here?
Yes.
The BIA, in fact, in its decision said he hadn't presented enough evidence. Why? Because the brother was a combatant. That's what we know. He didn't have a past association, and that's not what the ministry's letter says. The ministry's letter says he's associated with Islami, which is fighting the Taliban, which is actually, it's one of the many factors.
Counsel, I don't think I've ever seen a letter quite this personal to this individual warning that this individual will be in danger if he comes back. What do I do with that? That's quite unusual.
I think you look at it and say, what is the source of that letter? How did they get any of this information?
That's why I asked you from the get-go, was the authenticity of the letter ever challenged?
Well, it can't be. I'm not quite sure what you mean, because the government doesn't get to do this.
Well, I'm trying to figure out if that's your position. Is your position that you think it's inherently implausible? I've asked you that question, and that's what I'm trying to get at. I don't understand your position.
Not implausible, just not supported well enough. See, we don't know what...
Why not?
Because we don't know what the ministry actually knew and was told about Sharifi. Well, we know what they knew about his brother.
But
Sharifi was never a combatant.
Let me go back to my old saw, which is prima facie. Okay. So if there's a letter, and as Judge Christensen has said, it hasn't been at least anything we can see on the record, and which I think is a very important issue, the authenticity has not been challenged. If whoever it was, the BIA, had said, on the record, this is a... like they did previously, years ago, we don't believe the petitioner. But if they had said, this is a falsehood, we can't tell if there's anything to it, it seems, inaccurate. It seems to me that prima facie case is close to reasonableness. Is it possible? Is it reasonable? Something of that nature. Unless you can give me a definition of it, it seems to me that the burden, once the petitioner comes forward with something that on its face, it does not appear to be a falsehood, does not appear to not have authenticity, does not appear to have any credibility whatsoever, then it is then the government's burden, because the government, because the BIA here is looking to see whether or not this case should go forward. We're not talking about, as you mentioned in the beginning, whether or not he should be granted asylum. The question is whether or not he should be allowed to make a case again because of changed circumstances. It would be asking way too much of a petitioner in every single case where they're re-asking or they're asking to reopen a case to put on their entire case.
I see I'm out of time. May I have time to answer that? I don't want to take the court's time. As to the credibility or whatever, what the board actually found was, furthermore, the applicant has not sufficiently shown that his brother's alleged detention and abuse by the Taliban, detention and interrogation by the Afghan government, which is not in that letter, by the way, and subsequent release and disappearance, which is not in the letter, is sufficiently material. Significantly, the applicant has provided no information regarding the circumstances surrounding his brother's alleged detention. So although they may not have questioned the authenticity, they said it wasn't enough. And what we can expect, Your Honor, is in his declaration to state the facts behind this. Where did this letter come from? How was it obtained? Did it just materialize? Who wrote to them?
It says here, Ministry of Interior, you've got an accurate translation. We have a photocopy of what appears to be an official document. Huh?
Yes, and it says nothing about Sharifi other than something that the ministry may have been told. How does the ministry have this information?
Well, we've got people over there, haven't we? Why don't we just send somebody over there and find out?
But that was his burden.
Talking about a prima facie case.
And it was...
When I read this, it sounds to me like he's in real danger and due to his past will be under a severe threat of harm.
It was
his brother Hanif. Now, you think that somebody went there and paid somebody to fill all...
I'm saying we don't know, Your Honor, because his declaration doesn't tell us how this letter came about.
There's enough here, as far as I'm concerned, that tells me that his brother, that's the petitioner, is under real threat of harm on what goes on in that country.
Your Honor, when we started, you asked a question about everyone in Afghanistan. I'd ask you this. Who, going back to Afghanistan, no matter what he did, would not be in a real state of risk because of the turmoil in that country, which has persisted since 1989 or before with the Civil War? Nothing has changed. The Islami, the people that he claims to have supported, totally destroyed Kabul, and that is in the record.
Well, you're making the case for him.
I don't think Kabul is totally destroyed.
In 1989, it was bombed, in the 1990s, by the Mujahideen, specifically by Hizbi Islami. What we're saying is that it's always been very dangerous. He left. When he was ordered removed, he did not petition for review. He just ignored the order, which is why that's what we have to gain, because he ignored an order and he didn't comply.
Well, hold on for a second. But that is not the something the BIA relied on. In fact, that was something I was looking for. That's not in the record. That's not in the record that he didn't petition for review. And what's more, in the record, it's clear that the circumstances didn't change until much later in his life. And you're really making an argument on his behalf by saying that we all know, which is the same point I made, is a matter of just almost taking judicial notice, things are horrible there for anyone who's going back. So then if that's the case, if you start with that as the proposition, let's go back to the burden. You have not given me a case that establishes anything more than that there has to be reason, and it has to be on its face, credible reason. Otherwise, what you're asking and what you've proposed to us is that he put on his entire asylum case in order to establish that letter. He didn't come forward and say, gee, these are the circumstances. He has a letter. Objection to that is, well, you didn't establish that. You didn't bring this. You didn't bring for this person in. You didn't bring that person in. You didn't corroborate it.
Not didn't corroborate, Your Honor. Didn't show how it came to be. The burden is on him with the motion to reopen.
Well,
and he submitted
come to be is Judge Christensen asked the very important question at the beginning. You don't claim it's not authentic.
We don't know if it's authentic, so I can't claim that.
Well, okay. Then if you don't know it's not authentic, it's authentic for us. And so what more does he have to do? Does he have to corroborate it? You said he didn't have to corroborate it. So what does he have to do?
As the board said, he has to show the circumstances, more about his brother. Why was his brother captured?
What case law establishes that?
In Malti, the relative has to be, let me get the exact words.
That case was
similarly situated. We have someone who's been in the States, who was never a combatant, who was not a combatant at the time that his brother was, when his brother was captured. And he's saying because his brother was captured.
He was 14 years old. He was a runner.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a dangerous job. Have you ever been a runner?
I've never been a runner.
You don't live long, you know. Let me tell you that.
I've never been a runner.
Yeah.
But, again, that was with a different government. Now, the question becomes, how does the Taliban even know about him? What the BIA found was the letter does not give the circumstances. It's not enough.
All he's asking for is to reopen and present this evidence. See, that's all he's asking.
And I am well over, but our position would simply be that to make the prima facie case, he had to show what that letter was, where it came from. He had to present a little bit more.
I agree with you.
I understand, but what he's done is say they discriminated against Shiites. Nothing in the record supports that. You know, my family's been persecuted. His brother, who was a combatant, was captured by the Taliban and apparently released. That's all we know. We don't even know from that letter that he submitted that the brother was tortured, how long he was detained. The letter says nothing about that. He infers from the letter and then makes a lot of speculative or conclusory statements, I should say, about it, but they're not in that letter. All the letter says is that a combatant was captured by a rival militia and was released. That's it. It doesn't really speak to his situation. He's not similarly situated. That's what the board was getting at when he said we need more background on this.
How would he get it under the
circumstances? Okay, in his statement, I obtained this letter by. There's nothing. We just have a letter. How did the ministry get that information? Did it come from the brother? Did it come from Sharifi? How did the ministry know where Sharifi was staying? None of that's in there. That's
why,
what the board wants.
Why is that required for
it goes to a, well, not probable cause, to a prima facie case. The board wants to make sure that there's enough there to warrant reopening. And what the board found, and obviously I very much concede this court has concluded to the opposite, to the contrary, but what the board found was it's not enough to even go forward because conditions were exceedingly violent when you left, conditions are exceedingly violent now. Your father and uncle were killed before you left, now your brother has been captured, not killed as far as we know, but we don't know. What is your connection to him? I'm his brother. Are you similarly situated? No, he's just not. Not in this case. What we'd ask and what the board wanted is a declaration rather...
He might be if he goes back, you know.
But it should have been in his sworn declaration. How?
Yeah,
instead,
how?
What we have...
Tell me, how should he have done it?
By telling the circumstances. This is why I'm in danger. They said anyone who supported
the
Mujahideen 20 years ago as a runner.
Okay.
All they said was, he's in danger. But everyone's in danger. It's not... There's no nexus to a ground of persecution towards him.
We're letting you run because, you know, you're the government. We're afraid of the government.
So, Your Honor, nobody is afraid of me, and I apologize if I have engendered fear. I'm well over my time, but if there are further questions.
You are.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Tell us.
I feel the need to
Who is his lawyer at the start? Do you have a lawyer at the beginning?
I'm sorry?
Who was this lawyer?
That's a good question, Your Honor.
Sure.
I believe there were several lawyers involved. And also, when I happened to be reading the transcript, the interpreter, the individual hearing initially was continued because the interpreter was alleged by the government to be talking to the family outside the court, so she was disqualified, so the hearing was continued, and then later on, a new interpreter came. Now, that goes to the comments that counsel made.
Wait a minute. Now I'm not understanding, because I thought this was done on paper, that there was an opportunity to request oral argument, but there wasn't an oral argument. Are you talking about the original? What are you talking
original,
about? What hearing?
The original individual hearing for the asylum hearing.
Okay, so why is that pertinent? You're losing me now.
I'm sorry. I may have misunderstood Judge Pregerson's question.
Oh.
Forget about it.
Now, if I may address some...
My question was, were you his lawyer from the beginning?
No, Your Honor. Sorry, I went on a tangent. I apologize. He was improper in filing that motion to reopen.
And there was no hearing,
substituted
right?
in after the...
When did you substitute in?
When the case was in the Ninth Circuit.
So, when was that?
This was approximately a year and a half ago, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me ask a question about the law on this. You know, I've been harping counsel on the burden and the prima facie case issue, and as to what that means. To me, the law is unclear. It goes one way and it goes the other way. What about the case law that says that even if there is a prima facie case, the BIA is free to rule against the petitioner? How do you reconcile that inconsistency? Where are we on that?
It's true that the BIA has discretion to deny a motion. However, the BIA cannot act arbitrarily or capriciously in denying a motion.
But that's another way of saying this is an abuse of discretion standard, right?
Exactly, Your Honor. So just to address some representations that were made as to the record, Your Honor, the immigration judge at the asylum hearing did not find an adverse credibility, nor did he ever indicate anywhere that my client was a liar. The judge denied the petition mainly based on the fact that my client...
Counsel, we've already established credibility is not something the BIA relied upon in refusing to reopen.
Yes.
And so opposing counsel has conceded that's not part of our analysis today.
And also as to the letter, the petitioner's brother was not released. He was actually recaptured by the U.S. forces.
Is that in the record?
Afghan forces, yes.
Is that in the record?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where?
In the letter itself, during an operation.
Oh, I thought you were going beyond the letter.
No, within the letter.
All right.
It was rescued during a government operation against the Taliban, after which he was detained further by the Afghan forces, and after which he was released. Now, the letter does make specific reference to the fact that the Afghan government knew that petitioner's brother was in Hizb-e Islami in the past, and knew that the petitioner was a member or associated with the Hizb-e Islami in the past. And that was the basis for which they write the letter that the petitioner is under threat. Now, as far as where they got the information, how they got it, that's not required by law for us to show where they got it.
Isn't your position that as long as it's not inherently unbelievable, but at this stage we're required to accept this as true?
Exactly, Your Honor.
I understand.
That's my position.
Is there anything in the record that would explain, as counsel has suggested, that he should have come forward? Why didn't he come forward and, let's say, elucidate as to the reasons that are, or the facts that are set forth in that letter? Is there anything in the record that would explain, look, this is the reason why I couldn't do it, and these are the circumstances, this is all I was able to obtain, and anything like that that you can point to in the record?
In his declaration for the reopening, he makes a very detailed declaration as to what the circumstances surrounding his fear is of going back to Afghanistan, which is the standard here. The subjective fear is that the country conditions have materially changed, which conditions did not exist at the time of his asylum application. He lists those conditions, and he relates those conditions to his personal circumstances, which is that he was formerly a runner for the Hizb-e-Islami, and after that, his family has immigrated outside the United States. That is also on the record, which is asked in the asylum application. In the asylum application, it clearly states whose mother is, whose father is, and where they are, whose sisters are, and whose brothers are. And his mother has passed away since. His two sisters have moved on to Iran because they're Shias, because they experienced discrimination in Pakistan. And his brother, upon his return, was kidnapped in Afghanistan. Now that, coupled with all the changed circumstances, which is general to Afghanistan, which relates to the persecution of Shia minorities and also to former members of particular Mujahideen group, that by that petitioner has established that not only he has a subjective fear, and also, but he has an objective fear that a reasonable person in his shoes would be fearful for going back to Afghanistan, just as Mr. Pragerson alluded to, Judge Pragerson alluded to earlier in this hearing. So the standard, let's keep our focus on what the standard is. The standard is that he has provided sufficient non-opposed or non-contested evidence that demonstrates that he has made a prima facie case, which which requires which is deserving of providing him with an actual hearing where he could actually establish all this to the content of an immigration judge. That's all he's asking for at this particular point, and I believe that he's provided substantial country change conditions in Afghanistan since his initial asylum hearing, and he has provided facts about his personal circumstances, his family, and who he's married to, how long he's been out of the country. All of these factors together would put a reasonable person in his shoes in fear of persecution, a well-founded fear of persecution, if he's to go back to Afghanistan. As far as why he waited until 2010 to reopen his asylum hearing, yes, he could have reopened it before. However, he did seek to adjust status through his prior U.S. citizen wife only a few years after the BIA ruled dismissing the original appeal. And since then, he had been attempting to adjust the status through that. And as we have indicated in our briefs, he has currently a adjustment of status application filed with the Immigration Service with USCIS, which is currently pending. Even though he is even though he has a removal order, he has been ruled to be a excluded alien, and based on a 2007 USCIS memo, he still would be eligible for that particular relief. However, that doesn't make this issue moot, because he still is pursuing asylum because that hasn't come to fruition. There could be many reasons why USCIS may drag its feet or may deny his application for adjustment of status for some other discretionary reason.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
This matter is submitted. I will take up number 2 on the calendar, U.S. versus Celerio Ramirez.